WDFW Marine
radio
Reserve
show. And oh, Winger, I don't know about.
I'm also gonna do it.
Ezra, I'm ready to roll. All right. I'm going to open a meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today's March 12th, Thursday. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2759. We have our good friend, Representative Escoval, coming to visit us. It's very exciting times.
How are you, Representative?
Good. 4 hours sleep. I'm good.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee. I'm going to turn this over to, and this is a recordation of a document and a correction on a trust deed is what it is. And this is actually legal stuff. I'm going to turn it over to my good friend and comrade, Alan Brickley, and he is here to testify. It is his bill. He has brought it forward, and he will give you the outline of the technicalities and the legalities of why we need to have this bill, but it's very imperative that we do, unless we want to start unwinding closings. So.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Alan Brickley. My work address is 222 Southwest Columbia Street in Portland, Oregon. House Bill 2759 addresses a specific issue. There are two separate problems addressed here. The method of securing real property that's in primary use in the state of Oregon is a trust deed. In order to release a trust deed, there has to be either a partial or full reconveyance executed by the trustee who is named in the document. The partial reconveyance releases some of the property and leaves the rest of it subject to the lien. The full reconveyance does exactly what it sounds like, and that is release the entire lien from the property. The problem is, with the reconveyances, oftentimes the lender, the trustee, somebody is going to make a mistake in either calling it a full reconveyance or a partial when it's the other. And there is currently no method to correct that on the record. There are documents that have been used for that purpose. There's actually some documents in fairly wide use for that purpose, but the problem is that the county clerks will often, most often, reject the documents, refuse to record them because they can't find a statutory basis for it. So the purpose for this is to authorize the use of a correction document and to create a statutory form for that document so that it has the same use. The other problem that's addressed is the trustee's deed itself. The final step in a foreclosure process and the trustee process is a sale followed by a deed from the trustee to whoever the successful bidder is at the sale. The problem that occurs in this context is that, especially with the large national lenders, the workout department and the foreclosure department are two separate entities within the same organization. They don't talk to each other. And more than one time, we've had a situation where the workout department has made an agreement with the borrower in order to, continue payments on the trust deed and continue in the property. But the foreclosure department doesn't have that information. They go ahead with the sale. They record the trust deed. Now, literally, there's no way to unwind that transaction. So, again, the whole purpose for that document is to correct or rescind, is probably a better word, that trustee's deed so that the workout can continue without any interruption. So that's the purpose for the two statutory forms. That's the purpose behind the bill.
Questions? Had no other witnesses, so this is, if we're going to have them, this is it.
Just a form to, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Shoffler.
Just a form to correct mistakes, right?
That is correct.
Exactly.
Does it create and generate a whole bunch of extra labor,
no,
and cost, and admin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, no. Okay. The idea is just simply put on the record to reflect what has been a mistake and to allow people who are reviewing the record to know what has actually happened.
And Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah, please follow.
So, and I know in like in accounting, if you make a mathematical error, they don't like you to erase it. They like you to cross it out and amend it in the margin so that the error's still there and the correction's still there. Is that kind of what we're doing here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, that is a very good analogy. Okay. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Thank you.
Just to confirm that our clerks, which I see out there, they would like to have this tool as well?
My understanding, they have no objection to it.
Seem pretty happy. Yep.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Roblin, I'm sorry.
Thank,
I just need to wake
you,
up.
Chair. Document recording fee when you do this?
I'm sorry?
Pay a document recording fee when you do this?
Yes.
You'd have to.
That's what I would think, so.
Yes.
It's a money raiser.
Well, not for the clerks, but it is for the homeowners.
My God, we're going to vote for a fee increase.
Mr. Chair, does that mean that I'm proposing a tax increase?
I would think.
If I could call them fees. Call them fees. I don't know.
Mr. Chair?
Let me just check.
Okay, wait a check.
Would you like to ask a question? Are you okay, everybody?
I'm all right with that.
Okay.
And we are talking about 2759.
Yes, Vice Chair Krieger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2759 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2759 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay.
Is there any discussion?
My question is, have we gone into work session?
No. Wow, that's very good. Very good. No, we haven't. Any more questions for this panel? We almost broke some rules. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2759, open a work session on House Bill 2759.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll restate the motion to move House Bill 2759 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2759 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
He's not one of
them. Is there any discussion?
Save it.
Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Put it on either
consent.
Aye.
Excused.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Dillard.
Yes.
Representative Roblin.
Aye.
Chair Clapp.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill sent to the floor. Do we have any opposition to? What do I gavel there?
Sorry. Placing it on the consent calendar.
Do we have any opposition to place it on the consent calendar? Seeing none, we'll place it on the consent calendar. Great. Thank you, Representative Escoval. It's good to see you. We have no more of your business at the moment, do we? So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2560. This was our get it up. Oh, this was our bill the other day on prohibiting altering a document when you're re-recording corrections to it. And as far as I recall, colleagues, we had happy clerks, happy bill sponsor, although I don't think he made it in, but I don't remember having any problems with anybody on this bill, but be certainly happy for discussion on it. Anybody has any?
Representative Schaffler's pretty upset over the bill.
He just had to leave. Yeah. He's just tirading.
Yeah, I'm not speaking for him. But
well, then while he's gone, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2560 to the floor with a due pass.
It's still the quorum, right?
Yeah. Yep. Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2560 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right. We're going to, I'm sure, reopen this here in a little bit for the members who are gone. Representative Van Orn will be back, too, so we can do two at once, I think. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Roblin.
Aye.
Representative Keeling.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Excused.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orn.
Excused.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye. The motion passes. Now, consent calendar again, if there's no opposition.
I think we should make Representative Schaffler carry it.
Well, it is Representative Gilman's bill.
Yeah, how about I check with Representative Gilman to see if he wants to carry it, otherwise consent calendar?
Yeah, calendar.
Okay.
I mean, if not Schaffler.
I know. It could get colorful out there. With no opposition and that caveat, we'll place it on a consent calendar as well. Oh, we're moving right along. Let's see here. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2695. So, yeah, we'll reopen in a second.
Sorry about that.
Oh, I have to do it for Van Orman in a second anyway. She's
okay. It would have passed if you'd been here.
Oh, shit.
True. That was the vote we needed.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay, good. They're kidding. You're here to serve. This was our bill prohibiting the county clerks from refusing to record an instrument that is permitted or required by law to be recorded. Because of its title and the presence of extraneous information, we had a number of conversations about it. Again, my understanding is we have happy clerks and happy at the request of. So I think we're probably okay with the audience and the public. Any discussion here among our committee members on this one? Yeah, please.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 2694 to the floor with a due pass. 95, excuse me.
Somebody's bill is about to get real happy.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Just gone.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2695 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Could we look up 94 and maybe pass both of them?
God know them.
Congress just log roll them together.
That was my priority bill. I tried to.
That was a good move.
seeing no legitimate discussion, I will ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Gill.
Aye.
Representative Roman.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye. Motion passes. Now this one, I mean, there was a little more work on it, but.
Do you want to do that?
I'll probably wait till then, Norm, because I have to do it twice. Consent calendar, or does Representative Escobar need to spend a little floor time?
I assigned to him.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good explanation.
Yeah. I'm going to assign the carrier as Representative Escobar, and we'll send the bill to the floor.
Hey, dear.
All right.
This is more work. I think that this committee's done more work in the last 25 minutes than the...
Pretty much the whole session, yeah. All right. I'm going to, when Vice Chair Van Orman gets back, we'll do reopen on the two bills, three bills, actually. And I would like to get started, though, on our public hearings. I think we're going to do them together, if I remember right. So I'm going to open a public hearing on 2096 and 2097. Witness sheets, or it doesn't. We get these bills, for those of you interested, from the Rural Policy Committee that existed during the interim. Representative Roland was the chair. Anybody else from this committee on it?
Nope.
So we'll all learn about what the Rural Policy Committee found out there on their road tour, right?
Yeah, partly on the road tour, partly from just things that came up through the rural policy that really don't affect other people. And this one in particular, it's just a rural issue when you build out in these other areas. And they'll give a better explanation when.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to call Brant Wolf up. I think we'll just have Brant go ahead and start. And then we'll do a little, maybe a three-way panel on the next one. Actually, maybe if Brian Conway from the PUC wants to come up as well. I don't have you on 2096, just 2097, but if you want to talk about both, that's fine. And we'll let you two go, and then we've got some industry folks, I think.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Members of the committee.
I'm sorry, just one thing. You're not all inadvertently against your own bill, are you, 2096?
I am.
Okay. Got it.
It's not there on Gulf, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay. But, yeah, with no one for it to appear, so we'll just see how that one goes.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA counts 30 members. Rural independent telephone companies operate throughout Oregon. I've had a map distributed that kind of indicates to you where some of those members are and where they operate and kind of what we're talking about here. House Bill 2096 and 2097 were both introduced at the request of the association. House Bill 2096, we are opposed to that bill. Let me frame the issue here.
Yeah.
Carrier of last resort obligations. Each one of my members is assigned territory by the Public Utility Commission, and when they are assigned that territory comes some obligations and duties, and one of those is carrier of last resort obligation, which in short means that each person that resides in that assigned territory has the right to have telecommunications service provided to them by that company. That's in the law. As it happens now, with competition and other carriers able to provide these services in private developments like resorts or private subdivisions, gated communities, things of that nature, the developer of that area can enter into an exclusive agreement with someone besides the carrier that has the carrier of last resort obligation. And what that means, basically, is that all the facilities are deployed inside the gated community, and all of that's taken out to a meet point outside of the gate, so to speak, so that the only obligation we have is to take that traffic that's passed to us and get it out to the world, wherever it's supposed to go. If at some point in the future the quality of service inside that gated subdivision or what have you becomes substandard, or if they go out of business, anything like that, the carrier that has been frozen outside the gate still has the obligation to serve inside that community. And there's just no way around that. That's in the law. These two bills get at that issue in two separate ways. 2096 would prohibit exclusive contracts altogether, and 2097 would implement a process. The amendments to 2096, the bill that you have in front of you, would indicate that we, the carriers, go to the commission, submit a petition to be relieved of our obligation, and we get that relief. The amendments, which you don't have in front of you, would call for a process for that to occur. And that's basically the two bills. We're opposed to 2096 because, having tried to pass prohibition bills before in this building, that's next to impossible to do. It's the cleanest way for us, actually as carriers, and it might actually be beneficial to us because the default would be that we are the exclusive carrier, in my opinion. 2096, we're totally fine with that. The process is something that's probably necessary, and we've worked out the language with PUC staff and other interested parties.
I think you meant 2097 you're totally fine with.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm probably getting
confused. Before you're getting me fouled up.
No, I've got you against. I know, you can't change, I got you.
Right. So, 2097 amendments would call for that process, and we're okay with that. And we've worked all that language out with PUC staff. The proposed amendments are at Pledge Council, and we're just waiting for them to return. So, It's not a work session. We're not going to have one, so there's no ask here today. But I've spoken to, I think, every one of you on the committee about this issue at some point over the last year or so. And we hope to have a work session on 2097 where we will ask for you to give it positive consideration to pass to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That's the extent of my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. So, Brant, just so I get, I'm a visual kind of guy.
Yes.
Okay, here's my fancy hoity-toity subdivision where I live because I'm really rich.
Yes.
And I got a service in here, exclusive to my neighborhood. And then you got a carrier out here that is mandated by law to pick that up if this exclusive agreement goes away.
That's correct.
Now, you're making a process to make, okay, and let's say I'm the only other telecom going by the street that's servicing this exclusive agreement. The process would allow you to say, no, we don't have to serve that if this goes away. How does that fit into the mandate that you will serve as a last resort? How do you do that? How does the process work?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, I think if I understood your question correctly, the exemption that we would get would I think it's the second part that you're interested in. If the carrier inside your piece
goes
of paper
away.
Goes away, how then are we called back in to serve? Is that your question?
Well, the way I heard you was you would be exempt from being mandated to serve that if their initial carrier went away. But according to law, you have to serve them. Someone has to serve them, correct?
Well, yes, sir. We do now. And if we petition the PUC, go through the process, and we get our exemption, and we no longer have that obligation, then we are off the hook.
Then,
totally.
If I may ask you,
please.
Then what happens when this company serving this exclusive area goes out of business? Where do they get their phone service then? If you're the only wire cable going by the street,
sure.
How does that work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, the second part of the amendments would give the parties inside the subdivision the right to go to the commission and petition to have us come back in.
Okay.
And there's another process by which the costs are accounted for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we would go
right.
back in and serve those folks.
I knew there had to be an explanation.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Winger.
Brant, I'd like to understand just the equipment and cost issue of this. So you have a gated community, and somebody else has come in and built the infrastructure to provide phone service and then has gone under whatever the contract's it's run its course and it's not being renewed. I understand that. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is can that equipment, if it were legal to just simply turn that infrastructure over to you, does it not match what you're using? Do you have to go in and replace all of it? I guess I'm trying to figure out what the cost is since the infrastructure is
sure.
there. What's the cost for the other provider to come in and take over providing that service?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, there's a couple of different ways to think about that. If the services are deployed today and they go bankrupt tomorrow, we may sync up fairly well. But it depends on whether it's a cable company that's the exclusive provider, whether it's some facilities-based competitive provider that's deployed fiber or copper or whatever.
That'd be great.
I mean, it just depends on what they have in there. We may match up really well, and the cost would be minimal. If, on the other hand, this doesn't occur 10, 15, 20 years down the road, whatever they have in the ground there inside the subdivision may be totally obsolete, and you would have to rebuild entirely. So it really depends, I guess, is how I would answer that question.
Okay.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. There may be minimal cost. There may be millions of dollars. It just really depends.
Yeah, I guess the concern that I would have, because I'm basically with you on the concept of the bill, but my concern would be that if we change the process, what could happen to a community,
okay.
potentially, is that their equipment basically does sink, but it's an opportunity for the provider to extract a cost associated with coming in and taking it over. And one can, I mean, I've dealt with enough contractors that one can find all sorts of ways to add costs to the process. And I guess I'm just concerned that we make a distinction between the two events. In other words, if when one of your providers is asked to come back in, if it sinks, you know, I wouldn't like to see that gated community, or whatever the community is, you know, hit with a cost. Or, but if it, you know, if it is old and does have to be replaced, obviously that's the risk they took with their with the agreement they had, and you know, I have no problem with it being on the hook. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, and maybe Brian can help me out here, but the anticipation is that rules would be written and costs would be accounted for in a particular way at the commission. Because of who we are, we couldn't really go above and beyond what would the investment would actually be. I mean, we couldn't gold plate the thing, I think, is what maybe your concern is, or overcharge somebody for something or something along those lines. It would really have to be closely monitored. Just because we're, for lack of a better term, we're regulated in some way when it comes to those kinds of costs. Is that accurate, Brian?
Yeah, Chair Klein, the part for me is we're talking about amendments that you haven't seen yet. And so when in referring to what Brandt's talking about, the amendments we hope you will see soon, yes, the commission does have a role. There is a baseline cost that's assumed, and then the cost that the company says it is required to incur to serve these customers, that net is what we're talking about having, the company having the opportunity to recover. And whether it's from that customer base there or a wider group, that would be something addressed in the rules.
Could we have the witness identify himself?
Apologies.
Oh, thank you. Would you please identify yourself?
Yes, Chair Clement. My name is Brian Conway. I'm the administrator of the Telecommunications Division for the Public Utility Commission of Oregon.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Representative Wingard. I'm also, I'm hoping both of you gentlemen can help me understand a little more how a scenario like this would come into play, because, and we had a little conversation in my office about this. You know, my feeling is that when we're talking about both television services and phone services, there are in both cases wireless, or I guess for lack of a better way of putting it, wireless options that are available to customers in both those cases, both on from the television endpoint from satellite and from the phone standpoint from cell phones. And I see, especially on the phone end, a very significant generational shift away from landlines and to cell phones to one degree or another, although I understand for business purposes people will still oftentimes have landlines. I myself don't have a landline phone. Well, I do now because I have a legislative line, but before that I didn't. So I guess I'm kind of asking the question, I mean, is this really necessary? Is what's going on sort of breaking out of the need or the model for the regulated monopoly PUC scenario that we developed in the 20th century because of 20th century technology?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, first of all, it pains me to hear you say that. You don't have a phone in your house. Getting beyond that, there are a couple of reasons for this obligation, and they do, they're tied to the 20th century. There's no doubt about it. One of them is that back then, you had no options. There was the phone company, and that was it. And to go along with that, particularly in rural parts of the state, there were mechanisms in place where these small independent companies could get some subsidies to help pay for the deployment of those services. And that's still in effect. Part of accepting those subsidies, you agree that you will serve everybody in there. And maybe they don't want it. And if they don't want it, then you don't have to go out there and serve them. But if they do want it, then you got to go. And it doesn't really matter where they are or how much it's going to cost you. You have to go do it. And that's the reason for it. Whether or not we need to move away from that, that's a pretty big policy discussion to have. I mean, it's another discussion to have. And I certainly understand where you're coming from.
One last comment, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I think we're not talking about electricity here.
Right.
Which is the one thing that we don't have a satellite option. But, I mean, in my mind, the main reason why the regulated monopoly system was created for telephone and for television services for the cable services was because of rural areas. And in both cases, the technology that's been developed is beneficial to the rural area. You can put up a satellite and receive TV now. You don't need a cable line run to your home, which may be 50 miles away from the next closest home. And the same thing with television or a phone. You know, it used to be that you'd have to run a phone line all the way out to that person, and now they, through the use of cell phone technology, we don't need all that infrastructure run out to them. So I guess I realize that it's a big policy question, but at some point, government has to come into the same century that everybody else is operating in and recognize that technology has changed and that perhaps this mandate is not as necessary as it once was.
Sure.
We're getting lots of interesting things. I have a feeling someone's going to say what I would say. So let's start with Representative Roblin, who I know did a lot of work on listening to this.
I guess my concern is, and I'll give it to you in the form of a question. I am a subdivision. I make this really nice subdivision out here, and I decide either way, we're going to go with this guy who is giving us a really good deal to set up in each home satellite phones cell phones. So they're going to put cell towers. Now, there aren't cell towers around this place because we're in real rural areas, and I lose cell service when I go back and forth to home in a number of places. So there are places that don't have cell phone. But they've got this set up, and they're going to give them this great deal, and they set up, and they start doing it. So they don't really put lines in. They just have a cell phone tower, and everybody has a cell phone, and everybody thinks it's really great because it was a really good price. And then they realize, you know, the company down the road decides, we're the only one providing. We don't think there's anybody else that really wants to do this. So we're going to start jacking up the price. So pretty soon it gets to the point where the community starts saying, I don't think we like this service any longer. And so they say, we're done. And now they come to you and say, you have to provide us our service. Now, there's no lines in this place. There's nothing else. There's just this cell phone tower or whatever. And you either can become a cell phone provider now because you do a cell phone and you attach it to your equipment, or you have to put in lines. Is that a kind of scenario that could happen out in these kind of rural areas? There might not be any other provider except you or this one entity?
Now, Mr. Chair, Representative Roland, that is exactly the issue. That is exactly the reason we came with this bill. Because regardless of the exclusive contract inside that subdivision, if somebody like you went to somebody like Brian and said, hey, the law says, what are you going to do about it? We would have no option. It doesn't matter that we didn't have the opportunity to go in there at the beginning of the construction phase of this thing and do this. If the PUC wanted to exert its influence, we would have no choice but to bring one line to one person. that's an extreme example, but that certainly is possible. And that's really why we wanted this bill, is to exempt ourselves from that very thing.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Schaffler?
But we do run one line out to one person when they purchase the service. I mean, my dad had a Watts line moved back in the day, and the company he worked for dug a trench all the way out to our house 5 miles out in the country. But I want to go back to the more likely scenario. Rather than me out there in the wilderness negotiating with one contractor, and then they leave and I force you, which I suppose is possible, and I would have to negotiate with you then too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another agreement, a new agreement, and the PUC would force you to be reasonable, but they also would understand you have costs, so you kind of are protected under the law a certain way. First of all, correct?
Yes, there are some line extension charges that can be assessed against you as a private homeowner on your little one-acre parcel out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's fair. Now, on the other scenario where we have the neighborhood where they have an exclusive deal with provider X, and you're the carrier of the last resort going by, X goes out of business, you're forced to provide that. Now, they have to renegotiate with you again, too, or they can go out and negotiate with someone else again, too. And my friend here pointed that out to me. So you really, whatever you negotiate, you got to pay for whatever you want in this country, I would hope. So somehow, you're still going to have to, if they had chosen to have cell towers instead of landlines, and then the community goes, well, you know what, this guy went out of business, and the more we think about it, we want landlines. Now they have to negotiate with you, as carrier of last resort, to pay for that new infrastructure. Isn't that, am I getting all this straight?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffel, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. Right. And what we're setting up here, Mr. Chair, if you will, please, is a process to go through all that.
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct, on both ends, for us to get our exemption and for the homeowners or whoever inside to come back and get us back in.
Mr. Chair, we're not exempting anyone. You're exempt from automatically have to serve them. You're setting a process of how you would get to serve them.
Right.
Really, it is an exemption, though. It may be using that word, but you're setting up a rules for a process that would allow them to negotiate with you to continue service after the first carrier leaves.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, yes.
Okay. I'm ready to vote.
Representative Van Orman. Well, public hearing, we need amendments, but I hear you.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I'm sitting here in part
and
for
we
me,
have more witnesses.
I have some basic questions about the system because I'm new and this is all new to me. I only set cable rates when we used to do that in Oregon City. So as we're talking, for me, I have a landline because I can't get any other service because I'm not inside of a tower for one, and the cable hasn't been able to give me that service. So then in thinking about the PUC's relationship with these companies, my cable bill continually escalates, and I don't think it has to go to anybody for approval, but my phone company does. Is that an accurate assessment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Van Orman, that depends on where you live. Certain providers do have to go to the commission for rate increases and things like that. There are other providers in the state, telephone cooperatives, for example, that are in the OTA who don't. So it really depends on who your carrier is.
I see.
But there is a process. If you are in the cooperative territory, for example, they have a board of directors made up of the members, and you presumably can go there. And, if you have a complaint about your rates or whatever, then that's how you do that.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Gillen, did your phone have something to say besides ring, 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 ring?
It's his carrier blasting his
old call. I just thought it was, yeah.
He just cut his landline.
He put different ringtones on for people. We won't explain to the little whiny sound.
That's just awesome.
So it's a pretty straightforward issue, I believe. And we've worked out some of the issues with PUC staff and come to a what I think is a reasonable plan in House Bill 2097.
Okay, we've got some witnesses. Can we release this panel?
Yeah.
Oh, we haven't heard from the...
Well, did you want to add more? I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you.
First, my question, do you want to hear about the amendments you have not seen, or do you want my comments on the bills that are
question.
In front of you? I'm happy to do either one.
Yeah, that's a very good. Would you prefer to see the amendments before we hear about them? Probably, yeah. Let's just...
Nice to have them in hand.
Yeah, let's just save it. I'm sorry to make you come back.
About the two bills,
okay?
Though, is not bad. He could do just about these bills as they are. His short explanation about
Yeah. But let's not cover the amendments that we can't follow along with as you talk.
Okay, good.
That's our fault, by the way, actually, on the committee, on my end. We had some transitions and things, so the amendments didn't make it in. So it's my problem. Sorry about that.
Mr. Chair, my members of the committee, my comments on the bills as you have them in front of you are very brief, and that is that from the commission's perspective, neither one of those bills were ready for prime time, and so we've worked very cooperatively with Mr. Wolf of OTA, and we've come to amendments that we have, my understanding, they have been submitted, and we think that with both those amendments, we would support both House Bill 2096 and House Bill 2097, and our preference would be House Bill 2096.
Hmm. Questions on that? A little interesting tidbit right there.
Can I ask a question on the amendment that's coming?
Yeah.
On the amendment for 2097, it kind of gets at what Representative Shoffer was talking about. We are going to change the scenario so that community or group will now face the cost of one of your providers having to, lay the equipment in there in the line and all of that. And so that could be cost prohibitive. I mean, that's something they really have to face and decide how they're going to finance that internally in their community, whether HOA or whatever it is that they're doing. I mean, we're shifting the cost burden onto the area where now you would be, your member would just be obligated to come in at their own cost. Just put that in, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingert, yes. That's a very high-level view, but yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Laura Flynn Schaffler. But when you build a subdivision, the cost of that initial installation of that equipment is tied into all of that and then reduced down to the sale of the house. So we're not really adding anything. If you later demand that you want a landline, well, then that cost will be separate from purchase of your home, but it would have been in the purchase of your home had it been in there in the first place when the development was constructed. So we're really not adding any cost. They just may get it at a later date upon their request.
If it's the full, if I might just amend that a little bit, if they actually get the full cost of what it costs you, and if you actually charge them the full cost of what it costs you to actually get it there, you know, if there's four of them and it costs several hundred
right.
thousand dollars to get it all there, I don't think they're going to pay all that, are they?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, members of the committee, if you develop a subdivision and you don't have an exclusive contract with some provider, the phone company comes in and does that, and you pay your rate, whatever it is, for your phone service, so you can make a telephone call. That rate doesn't go up or down depending on where you live. It depends on some carriers and things like that. But if you lived in phone company A and you had the subdivision built and there's 500 homes in there, you're going to pay 10 or 12 or 15 bucks for your dial tone, whatever it is. If you have a contract with somebody else, say, whoever, and they charge you the X amount of dollars, and then for 10 years you're happy, and then that all goes away, and you have to petition the PUC to have us come back in, for example, then there would be some extra charges. You might have to pay. The people that live in that subdivision might have to bear the cost of that rebuilding, I suppose, for lack of a better word. I don't believe that will be spread out over the ratepayers of the entire state of Oregon.
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, we're talking about the as amended bill.
Right.
Yeah.
So as the one in front of you, they would be exempt from serving those customers and nobody would be required to serve those customers.
Right.
In the amended bill, he's talking about a process by which we would figure out the additional costs and have those costs be recoverable by the company who is now obligated to serve again.
Right, and that's if they choose us. If they, as somebody pointed out, if they went with somebody else, then all bets are off because that might not be a regulated company and they pay whatever they pay.
And would the costs, I mean, I guess it's a commission decision, but is it likely that if the costs were just enormous for four houses to, you know, would they actually make the full thing recoverable divided by four? Or is that historically what happens?
No, Mr. Chair, if it were to be spread just to those four customers, what I'd say is that they would know what the cost would be up front and they would have a choice.
Yeah.
The commission would not put the customer in the position of, yes, you get your phone line in, and then a month later you get a bill for $100,000.
Yeah, yeah.
But the cost is on them.
Yeah, Representative Irwin, we've got several witnesses right. Probably to point out more
in
points.
In part, what we're saying is, when you first build the infrastructure, if they are required to go in because they are the provider, they'll go in and put that in because the ground's ready to go. It's easy to put it in. You just take care of it, and it's done. If they don't choose that, they go with another provider, they're going to put whatever system they want in, and it may or may not be connectable. And so, I mean, it will be connectable at one point, at the point where they put it back on the line, because most of them do that. But they might not have the same kind of equipment that does the stuff inside. So now I'm going to have to come in and tear up your road, do whatever if I'm going to lay my cable. That's going to cost. You had the opportunity to take the advantage of that at the beginning. You chose not to because you wanted to get a better deal. Now you're going to have to pay for that new cost that it would take to put back in what would have gone to you originally for free.
Spread out
amongst all the ratepayers. And federal subsidies. I mean, that's why the federal subsidy program was put in for these rural areas. So it's
stupid. Forgive me.
So what we've done now, though, has come up in this amendment, as I understand it, is a process by which the PUC tries to make that fair as much as they can to people. And they'll have to decide what that means. But they now are taking over the regulation, saying, yes, you will provide it, but we see these costs as being appropriate, so you can charge this, you can't charge more, and we'll tell you what that is. I mean, that's kind of, as I understand it, is that kind of correct?
And then if they, so please.
Well, sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Roblin, as amended, that's
right.
What we're discussing.
Right.
And then essentially they would know the costs if they decide that.
They'll go out and find another company to provide this.
Or if there is none and it's in a no-sell area, they'll just decide, hey, I decided to live off the grid. Because, you know, and actually, I'm not sure this is actually about rural communities. Mm-hmm. This is about rural subdivisions that don't want to live in rural communities. I mean, to be fair, you know, if you live in a community in rural Oregon,
you got your service.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I own a house along the Umpqua. My dad lives there. We got all kinds of problems, but we want to live along the Umpqua. So, no cell phone, not even close. 15 miles to anything.
That's true.
You know, when the trees fall down on the road, the county's like, hey, there's a lot of trees, buddy. Saw them up yourself. That's what we have to do because we want to fish all day long. But you know what? We shouldn't get subsidized for that, really. I mean, it's my choice to buy the house and his choice to live there.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, if you had those four people at the end of this road and it's $200,000 to put in it, and that's what you're going to charge them for the four, and two of them said, hey, I don't want it. I'm just going to go without service. And the other two got to pay the full $200,000 services put in. A year later, they said, yeah, I want in. Then what happens?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that's correct. I suppose that could happen. But what we're talking about here is subdivisions and gated communities, not individual homeowners on their lots. If there's a four-house subdivision in the middle of nowhere, and two say they want it and two say they don't, yeah, I mean, I'm guessing here, but the two who want it and can afford to pay for it might end up paying the bulk of the cost for the two who don't and wait a couple of years.
How do we get into the
there's a couple there's
of
here's an example. There is it's an area outside of Sisters. It's north and east of Sisters. There are a couple of hundred homes there. They have nothing right now. They have there's nothing there. And one of my small members, Pine Telephone, is attempting to get a process through the FCC whereby they get their subsidy and they can go out and they're going to put fiber into this place.
Is Three Rivers?
You know, yes, it is actually.
I met about 30 of them last night at a hearing.
Yeah.
Metolius till 11 at night in Madras. Yeah. No one could get in because it was locked at the gate.
Right.
Oh. They want, apparently.
Well, a lot of things, actually.
They do. And one of the things they want is phone service. Maybe that was a bad example. I'm not sure.
No. This is a good example. This is a real. I mean, so Pine,
this is Pine can do this, and they will pay the whatever their rate is, $10, $12, whatever it is. If that group of people went with an exclusive provider, and they were happy for 10 or 15 years, and then Pine had to come back in later, they'd pay more. They would definitely pay more. And so that's just kind of a real life example of what we're talking about here. And there are, believe it or not, there are lots of places in this state that don't have electricity, phone, water, sewer, whatever.
Representative Shoffler.
You know, I tell you, knowing what I know now, and these can't be totally unsophisticated people, if you have a 200-unit neighborhood, and by law, the large last resort carrier has to send that infrastructure out through there and spread the cost of that, the initial cost, out throughout the whole ratepayer base, you'd be stupid not to ask them, not to put that in, knowing that later you may need them if your carrier, your exclusive carrier, goes belly up. And if you do make that rather, I think, irresponsible decision, then you should have to pay to get your equipment out there and do it all over again. I mean, people have to be responsible. My grandfather in Minnesota, when the Rural Electrification Act was going by his farm, They were like 2 or 3 miles down the road, and he went down there and said, hey, can you bring this line up? They said, no, we can't. It's not, you know, in our plan right now. We're going to get there. He goes, I'll go buy the poles, mm-hmm. and I'll buy all the wires and all the insulators and anything you need. He said he would pay for it himself out of his pocket. And they still didn't, because that wasn't on their plan. Eventually they got electrified. But if you make this decision willingly, knowingly today, then you got to live with it. And I, why would anyone not want this service and infrastructure put in the initial construction is what I want to know. Why would anyone choose not to? Unless they want to be out there with no phone, no technology, and fish all day. And God bless them, because they can. Those folks can take care of themselves, and we need more of them in this world. But this is just incredible.
Representative Wingard. Now I'm going to get on a tear too, but we have some other.
Just want to clarify that if I'm a developer and I'm building a subdivision.
Yes.
I want to understand the rules. If my intention is to sign an exclusive agreement, can I still get you to come in and put your infrastructure into my subdivision? I mean, will you do that knowing you're not going to have any customers?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Wenger, no. I mean, that's the whole point. We aren't allowed in.
I'm prevented from signing an exclusive agreement if I let you come in and lay your equipment in.
Right.
In other words, if I'm building a 500-house subdivision, and I want you to come in and put in your infrastructure just in case someday I want it, I cannot sign an exclusive agreement with someone if I ask you to come in and do that.
I would imagine that depends on the contract that you sign. I mean, if I am not the incumbent carrier, if I'm a competitive company trying to make a living, I'm not going to go out in the middle of nowhere, frankly, and deploy all those services if I'm not going to get the subsidy to pay it back, and I'm not going to have exclusive rights to everybody in the subdivision.
So
I'm not going to do that.
Mr. Chair, follow up. I understand that the private company, the non-regulated company, isn't going to come in without an exclusive. What I'm saying is if I'm the developer and my intention is to sign an exclusive, but I come to one of your members, too, and I say, well, I back up, I'd like you guys to come in and lay in your infrastructure. Will you do that, knowing that I'm going to sign an exclusive agreement?
Mm-hmm.
Or do your rules essentially state to me, yeah, we'll come in and lay it down, but by the way, you're prohibited from signing an exclusive agreement if we do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, no, there is no prohibition like that. If we weren't frozen out, you know, that's a very good question, actually. That is a very good question. I didn't contemplate anything like that happening. If there's an exclusive agreement signed, if I'm the exclusive small company, I wouldn't sign an agreement like that. The agreement would say, we are in, they are out. That would be the agreement that I signed.
Right.
And if somebody tried to do a backdoor deal and was like, well, you know, the streets are open, why don't you come and throw your conduit in?
But I don't. If I'm a developer, I don't sign exclusive deals with the servers of last resort. I mean, you guys just lay.
That's correct.
Right. So I guess what I'm trying to understand is, to get to Representative Schaffler's point, why wouldn't a developer doing a 500 home development not just ask you guys to come in and lay it down and say to the person that I'm intending to sign the agreement with, I'm just asking them to put that down as a backup, but I will be signing an exclusive agreement with you. So they're going to lay in their equipment, but we're going to have an exclusive contract, you and I. Is that scenario possible?
Yes.
And if so, then I would agree with Representative Schaffer. I don't know why any developer wouldn't do that, simply to provide the homeowners with that option down the road, you know, so they have a negotiating point, at least, when they go to renegotiate that contract. And if, you know, maybe we need to require that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wenger, if the streets are open and we can put our conduit in and we're allowed, we'll take advantage of that. We absolutely will. I mean, it's cheaper for us long term. Even 15 years from now, it would be cheaper if we're already there.
So I guess my concern then is, Mr. Chair,
please follow up,
that it's in the developer's interest, perhaps, and in the private company's interest, before the homeowners ever get into this process, to sign an agreement in which the private provider is saying to the developer, don't let the carrier of last resort put in their equipment. That's part of the deal I want with you, Mr. Developer, for this exclusive contract. Then the homeowners only realize this 10 or 15 years later, that the developer essentially sold them out and did not put in a backup system that would allow them a negotiating point with their private provider. So that there is a, I mean, I have that concern because, you know, maybe if you're a homeowner, you really don't real. I mean, you come in and you don't know for years what the developer has
right.
really done as far as what decisions they've made for and against your interests over time. And so I guess this might be an opportunity in this bill to remedy that. I mean, what I would like to see, I guess, is the requirement from the developer standpoint. I'm not opposed to them signing those exclusive agreements. But it seems to me that it's in the best interest of the homeowners that developer make sure that if it doesn't cost anything from the developer standpoint, that the service provider of last resort be allowed to come in and lay their equipment in for simple competitive reasons.
Please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, there is a cost to laying conduit in, so that would be a cost the developer would incur. And for Quest, as an example, they have a tariff that covers this. But you're right on the point as far as the people who buy the houses may not find out until 10 years down the road.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that the commission prefers 2096 to 2097, is that if we get rid of the exclusive agreements, much like the FCC is, or Federal Communications Commission has done with video and phone and office buildings, apartments, and condominiums, then we don't have that problem. We also don't have the other problem where half the division doesn't want to pay, half does, and we have to figure out how to split that up. And so, excuse me, and so it would be a cost for the developer. A developer may choose not to do that, particularly if a provider came in and said, I'll tell you what, I'll do it all for free, just sign an exclusive rights agreement with me.
One last question, Mr.
Yeah.
I think, again, the other element I would put into this is I think it comes down to whether or not what the developer is doing with the exclusive service provider syncs with your equipment. You know, I don't think there's a need to have you come in and double up if 15 years down the line this service provider and the homeowners are at a disagreement over cost and they simply can unplug and plug.
Right.
Into you guys, and that creates the competition. But if it's going to be something like cell towers or something that's just not, I mean, it's a totally different system, I am concerned that the developer is making an arrangement with the exclusive service provider that is not in the homeowner's long-term best interest. Although I, again, want to be clear, I am not opposed to the idea of signing exclusive agreements. But I think that it's important that there be some consideration in there for what creates that competition, and if the homeowners are actually signing off on a deal where they are limiting themselves to one provider who will have leverage over them 10, 15 years later, that's one thing. But when that deal has already been struck and then they come into a development and buy without fully realizing, because I doubt there's much information given in detail in front of them that, hey, by the way, there's an exclusive deal here with a guy who has special equipment, fantastic stuff, but by the way, he will be the only person ever able to provide us this 10, 15, 20 years from now, so that's a heck of a lot of leverage that he's going to have. I don't think homeowners understand that when they come in, so that's where my concern is.
There's another sort of parallel situation that can occur when a builder builds like a small 4 or 5 type of unit. Usually it's within a UGB or right near, and they encumber the future buyer with non-remonstrance agreements that they will voluntarily consent to annexation on the deed. Sometimes it's not even on the deed. They've signed a non-remonstrance agreement with the city, and then you get a letter that says, you're going to agree to be annexed or we're suing you. And I've seen the letters. And then they say, what? Why would you sue me? And they say, because your builder signed you up for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Yeah. So that's another issue for another day. But I have some concerns as well. And again,
a lot of things.
You know, this is just my editorial, and then we need to hear from the other folks. But the biggest problem that I see where this comes up is sort of old stranded rural subdivisions, because we have land use laws partially for this reason, or the one big way you can place a ton of houses out in the middle of nowhere, which is a destination resort. Mm-hmm. With that, any more questions for these guys?
Are we doing medical marijuana today, too?
Yeah. I got like three pet wolves that I want to have in my house.
Mr. Chair, I just had a quick on the sheet that was just passed out that looks like it's engrossed. Is that what the amendment for this was, or what is this?
Yeah, please. I may have committee staff help us.
Mr. Chair, representatives, on House Bill 2096, because of the transitioning committee services, that amendment wasn't requested. That is the exhibit that was turned in by Mr. Conway today. For your information, it's not official. It's not from LC, but we'll request it if we're directed to do that. On 2097, amendments have been requested.
So, if we can release these folks, we've got three folks from industry that are for 2097 and against 2096, and they've been witnessing our little exchange. I'm sure have some opinions. Or maybe just want to turn around and leave at this point. I'm unclear. So I've got Mike Dewey, Jenny Lang, and Jim Green.
Who would you like to have start?
How about Jim?
Jim?
Then Mike, then Jenny. That's the order you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
My bandwidth was good last night, so I'm not making you go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Green with Verizon. I thought these were going to be simple little bills to come and discuss before the committee this morning.
Have you been in front of this committee before?
No, and I'm not quite sure I want to come back.
Welcome to the club.
But on behalf of Verizon, I think what you see in 2097, which is the bill I'm here to support, we don't support 2096, which would be a prohibition on these type of agreements. What we see in 2097 with the amendments that are coming out of council at some point is a process set up so that we, and we being Quest is one, CenturyTel, Embark, and Verizon, we're what's called the incumbent local exchange carrier. We're the one, and some of Brandt's members are given that what we call carrier of last resort obligation. If somebody's going to provide it and somebody wants it, we've got to provide that telecommunication service. What we want is a process set up that allows us to go to the PUC and say, look, there's been this exclusive agreement. We'd like to be able to not have that carrier of last resort obligation. But in addition to that, a process set up that says, hey, if that carrier goes away, something happens there, there's a process at the PUC that those folks can petition to come in and say, wait a second, we need this service. PUC, assign this to somebody. And it's probably territory that we currently have. I think Brandt Wolf passed out to you a map showing the state of Oregon and where the carriers are across there. My company's the company in red, and you can see the various companies that are across the state. We just want a process set up, because if you read the statute today, there's no process. And I think Jenny Lang from Quest has an issue coming up right now with regard to a development like this, and there's nothing in process. What we're asking for is simply a process to be set up in statute so that if we want to get out of that carrier of last resort obligation, we have the ability to petition the PUC. That's not to say they're going to grant it, but at least it allows us a process by which to do that. There's also a process by which a consumer could go before the PUC and get that carrier of last resort obligation put back on someone. We're okay with that. And if you take a look at the amended language, even though it's not an LC version, there's a process by which the PUC assorts those costs out, which have to be reasonable. Yeah, I think you've had a great discussion here about this issue. Would it be cheaper and would it be better when a developer creates a development to allow folks in when the streets are open and the trench is open to put their conduit in and put the cable in? You bet. That doesn't always happen. What we're asking for is a process in statute to create at the PUC an area where we can get away from that carrier of last resort obligation, but if ultimately it has to come back, that there's a process in statute for that to come back as well. And that's what we're here to support today.
Buyer.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious who these companies are that are doing exclusive contracts. Would any of you enter into exclusive contracts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Buyer, we do not on our telecommunications service. We as a company also provide video service now, and we will enter into those under the FCC regulations, but not on telecommunications services. I think there may be other folks at the dais who could speak to that, but we do not do that with telecommunications currently.
And follow up, and sure. And it sounds like maybe some of you do and some of you don't, but who else would be doing these?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Beyer, I can think of a couple of companies. I think Charter Communications was one that entered into these type of exclusive agreements. I'm not quite sure on that, but I know as far as it relates to telecommunications, it's not us. Maybe Mr. Dewey could answer as it relates to his members.
Thank you.
Yeah, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourselves and take a shot at that question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. This actually beats health care. I want to thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Beyer, before I get to my remarks, let me take a shot at your question. Most exclusive agreements are going to be either business-type agreements, which makes sense, or in apartments, those kinds of multi-unit dwellings. Now, the FCC has some prohibitions in that area, but that's being litigated, and I don't know what's going to happen with regard to that. But that's usually where that occurs. We don't have a lot of situations where we have failures, if you will. But you get a lot of bills where there's been one or two issues that have arisen, and you need a fix to it. If the obligation is a carrier of last resort for the incumbent, and if you continue to have that, we believe there needs to be a process, because it's not fair if this telecom unit fails for whatever reason, goes bankrupt, can't provide the service anymore, hasn't kept up with technology, those kinds of things. There needs to be a process. I mean, the world has changed. We compete with these folks. You see ads all the time about the triple play and those kinds of things. So it does make sense for a developer to look at the business landscape to see what kind of deal they should get. But at the same time, there ought to be this buyer beware to make sure you're utilizing a company that is a company that is a quality company, not somebody that just got in the business and isn't able to provide the state-of-the-art services in these kinds of areas. Again, these are private, if you will, easements. Otherwise, these companies and we would be able to provide that service. So it's not significant, but it's in more of the rural areas. And I think the issue ought to be addressed in the sense that, again, and it may be that they ought not to be the carrier of last resort anymore. You're probably not willing to go that far, but if you want to address it, I think you ought to address it with a process. That concludes my remarks.
Yeah, can we let them do their prepared remarks and some more questions? Okay, thanks. Please. So, Jim, were you sort of finished with your presentation?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Mike, you're good for the moment?
Good. I'm enjoying myself.
All right, great. Hi, Jenny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lang, and I represent Quest Communications. Specifically to Representative Beyer's question, we enter into similar kinds of agreements that Mr. Dewey just mentioned, for example, in an apartment building or a business building of some kind. And that's really been the pattern that that we've had to date. The issue has arisen for us in a couple of places in Central Oregon, as well as in a number of our other states where high-end resort development is a big factor, for example, in Arizona. But here in Oregon, we're dealing with two situations right now, one with a development called Brasada Ranch, and the other actually with Sun River, where the telephone company there has decided not to continue business. And they've served Sun River residents well for many, many years. So we are working with the PUC now to accommodate the customers in both of those areas, and the situations are slightly different. So I think it was Representative Wingert who earlier said, you know, this is a 20th century issue, and that's right. And what we're trying to do with House Bill 2097 is deal with the transition of moving away from a 100-plus-year-old monopoly system to one where there are multiple providers and where there are customers who want lots of different kinds of products and services that don't all come from the same provider in today's world. So this is, you know, one piece of trying to move the whole system out of the, actually maybe 19th century, into the 21st century, and we would appreciate your support of the amendments to House Bill 2097.
So, just a moment. I spent about 5 hours in October listening to the neighbors of Posada Ranch talk to me about various issues. I drove through it, saw that it's about half built, I think, maybe, and just a lot of roads, just sort of out, I mean, just roads all over the place and no houses. So what happens if we don't pass these bills with your work with them?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think by working with the PUC, you know, none of those customers are going to be out of telephone service, but it would be helpful to have a little bit more structured process about how that happens if and when the situation arises. As it is, we're making it up as we go along, because these situations are new to us.
But if you can't really, do you have the option to choose not to? I don't think you do you?
Well,
are they in an exclusive agreement? I don't know the situation there.
Correct. And I don't know all of the details of that situation myself, but it was, in fact, an exclusive agreement where we were not allowed to put any facilities in. We're right outside the gate in order to, at the meet point, in order to hook them up to the switched network. The situation is, if customer A, in the half of it that is already billed, had called and said, we really don't want the services provided by the exclusive, we want service from Quest, we would not have had a choice but to build out to that customer residence.
And then there would be no process, unless we pass the bill, for you to potentially have them compensate you for coming out there in some way.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that absent any other rules or process in place, that we could have charged line extension charges in order to get the service to that customer.
Are there any limits on those in federal law or anything else?
No.
Representative Krieger, I think you had a question, and then we'll go.
Just briefly, not maybe so much about what we've been talking about directly, but on the South Coast, there's a belt just along the coast where we have service from Verizon, and there's a lot of difficult spots, as Representative Robin said, as we move through, you're on for a minute and a half, and then you get knocked off. Maybe when the meeting's over, I could speak with you just a minute.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I'd love to have a conversation with you offline about our, and I'm assuming you're talking about our wireless side there. Mm-hmm. Right. Because the map that you have there isn't wireless. The map that you have there is what we call landline service. And, you know, we have different maps that show where coverage is. And Richard Kosasan and I would love to have that conversation with you about where Verizon wireless coverage is and isn't in the state. I think we've done a pretty good job of building that out. But Oregon's a very diverse state, as you know, geographically, geologically, and we can't get cell service into every pocket of the state. We try, but it's not something you can do across what is a very large state and very diverse geographically.
Good. Thank you.
Representative Shoffman. Thank you. I think Representative Wingard made some good points about potential manipulation here. But the thing that the homeowner who unknowingly purchases a home in some neighborhood where there's this exclusive deal, are they notified that it's an exclusive telecom deal before they purchase the home so they could avoid this problem? Happy Valley, in the 80s, there was a lot of federal money being thrown around for water improvements, water and sewer improvements. And the city had the opportunity the Clackamas Sewer District came out and said, we have this money, we can lay these lines with federal money at no extra cost to the property owners. And in all their wisdom and their thoughts and beliefs that they were going to stop development and growth, they said, no, we don't want it. It'll encourage growth. Well, now you wind the clock forward into the late 90s, and I'm on the city council, and we have runoff water quality problems in the ditches because all the septic tanks are failing. You can still literally smell them when it rains heavy on Mount Scott. Not as much, but and I have since then. Now, but the homeowners, every lot owner had to pay $8,000 to $10,000 out of our money to put that system in because we, as a community, made a bad decision, to be quite frank with you. And it's exactly the same scenario here, in my humble opinion. My question, because it's exactly the same thing. We decided not to have utility at no extra cost put in. Later on, we made a mistake, we do, and now we pay. On these unclaimed areas, you're not mandated to go out there with a line, correct?
Correct.
And let me frame it a little better. Let's say there's a nice cabin right down this road from Chair Clem's, and I know there's no phone system in there, but I like that. I choose to buy it. I knowingly do. And I'm out in one of these unclaimed areas, and later I go, gosh, you know what? I want to get a phone, or I want a cable, or internet. You don't have to go out into here with a line, do you?
Unless Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to pay for it. Representative Shoffler, that's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just one more item. With regard to just alternatives, let's say that you have a system that is failed. The incumbent hasn't come in. And I suspect they might take their time to come in, notwithstanding what the law says. Well, we don't have the equipment available at this point in time. They're going to try and figure out how to make this desk work. So the opportunities are, I think last year for the first time, the wireless side of the business in terms of the number of cell phones as opposed to landlines was more. So the penetration is higher. So you do always have that wireless option, assuming it's available. So you don't need a landline. You can go to the satellite side of the equation. If you had a cable service that, you know, is coax or fiber, so you can put a dish up, depending on what the code is for a community. And then internet is important for people, and you can get wireless internet. You can get satellite internet. It's a bit more expensive, and that's why the penetration isn't very high. So you do have alternatives for most of these kinds of areas. So you've got to go out and search those, but you could go down that road. You know, each resident could make a different decision in terms of what they wanted.
So, Representative Shoffler, I've got we got a landline, dial up 56K. I've got we do have DirecTV.
Are you cabin?
Yeah. Now, if you go up around the left, there's a big fridge full of beer all the time. It's always full.
And I'll help you clear them trees.
All right. The big bearded guy fishing down there, that's my dad.
Bless him.
He'll feed you, too.
A fine American.
I was the worst.
I think we're about done for the day.
I think so.
I mean, we got 31 more minutes. I mean, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll talk. We'll see amendments, and we'll talk further. I'm going to get some people to vote.
That's right.
Thank you. Let me close this public hearing. And I have... I would
suspend the
term. I request unanimous consent to suspend the rules to reopen a work session for the purpose of recording votes on House Bill 2759, House Bill 2560, and House Bill 2695. Is there any objection? So noted. Would the clerk record the votes on 2759 of Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Oh, that was a mistake.
And no, I lied. We were all no's.
Mr. Chair, I missed that.
That's okay. I've been used to being one.
Yeah. I missed a second one. Yeah. Forgive me.
On House Bill 2560, Representative Shoffler and Representative Van Orman.
Vice Chair Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair, sorry.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye. And On 2695 for Representative Van Orman.
Vice Chair.
Aye.
And work session's closed.
You got a phone in there?
Closing the work session on all three bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to adjourn our committee.
I want to know how come Happy Valley.